Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where educators go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top leaders across the globe. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Danny Sunshine Bauer.
This is a bonus episode with Missy Emler. Hey there, this is Danny Sunshine Bauer. I'm a former classroom teacher and school administrator turned life and leadership coach. I'm also the host of this podcast where each week I share my conversation with top leaders from across the globe to help you accelerate your leadership development. In today's show with Missy Emler, we explore a number of interesting topics like the best thing a school leader can say. It is a pretty cool quote, I'm not going to lie. Assessments mean to make more sense. And how do we talk about the impact of testing for students? There's no podcast upgrade in today's episode. Missy shares an ebook that I highly suggest you go and download called The 7 Strategies to Win the War on Learning. So you can get the link from the show notes and grab that resource. Thanks for spending some time with me listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. But before we jump into the episode, I'd like to take some time to thank our show sponsors. I'd like to share an incredible free resource for the better leaders that listen to this podcast. It's the top 10 fundraising ideas for 2018. And that's available at schoolzonepodcast.com. And just like the title says, you'll get the top 10 school fundraising ideas for 2018 when you download it at schoolzonepodcast.com. A lot of school leaders talk about improving student soft skills to help them succeed in their rigorous coursework. The problem is that most leaders just talk about it without actually doing anything. You can improve your students' non-cognitive skills today by checking out an amazing program called Organized Binder. Learn more at organizedbinder.com. Well, hey there, better leaders. Today, I'm joined by Missy Emler, who is the Director of Innovation at a regional service agency in Wisconsin and the Educational Administration Program Coordinator at the University of Wisconsin-Platteville. When engaging in conversations with Missy, her energy and enthusiasm for learning are contagious. She's a relentless advocate for school leaders and their learning needs as they maneuver their way through this time of massive change in education. Welcome to the show, Missy.
Thanks for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
I am excited too. We've been connected for a while, but it took a minute to get this show recorded. But it's great because I know we're going to get to some work that you want to share with the listeners. But before we even get there, can you just start at the beginning and what inspired you to pursue a career in education?
Yeah, well, I was always a learner and I always loved school. I played the game of school really well. I was always the teacher's pet. And in first and second grade, I remember the teachers getting rid of the textbooks because they were getting a new set, I'm sure. And I raced to get the teacher copy every single time. And so I spent my summers playing school. And that's just, I just always wanted to be a teacher, likely because it's sort of what I saw people doing all of the time. You know, that was the career that was modeled for me the most. But yeah, I always wanted to be the teacher. And I think it's interesting because I would advocate against this now, but I think it had something to do with always being in control.
Stay with that a little bit. What do you mean?
Well, I think that my thought about my thinking around school and teaching and learning is now I believe that compliance is actually detrimental to the learning process. And a lot of us really still seek out a high level of compliance when in reality, compliance doesn't necessarily imply or lead to learning, even though it looks like that's what's learning when everybody's compliant. So yeah, I always ask the question, are we seeking compliance right now or are we seeking learning? And that always makes people sort of stop in their tracks as they try to answer that. But it leads to interesting perspective, but I'm certain that as a kid, I really liked the idea of being in control. And now further into the career, I really seek to look and I look for classrooms where it isn't a control and compliance base. It's really based in learning.
And there, you know, it's exciting, but it could get a little messy. It's definitely probably not the model that the educator or the school leader had grown up with. And so it's, right. it's a paradigm shift, but a lot of people are waking up to the sense that this is what we need to do. This is the right shift to make. And so if you grew up right through the compliance system, but now you want to create one that is more of a creative, you know, and connected to people's passions and interests, you know, what are some first steps that folks can take to get there?
Yeah, well, I think that it's really a matter of getting deep into your own belief system and really understanding what you believe about learning. And I work really closely with Will Richardson and Bruce Dixon at Modern Learners. And we really talk a lot about Seymour Saracen's book, What Do You Mean by Learning? And we really, every group of people that we talk to and inside of our communities, Change School and Change Leaders, we are constantly asking that question, what do you believe and what do you mean by learning? And it's really an interesting question. But as people dig into their own beliefs about learning, we really see that when we start to rethink the compliance-based model, that we really have an uphill battle. And sometimes in our own minds, but sometimes we believe, you know, in learning more than compliance, but the system and the structure that we work within is not ready for that change.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, often I always say that the best thing a school leader can ever say, and I'm a little biased because I did say this almost every day when I was a principal, is I'm not asking you to change. In fact, I don't want you to change at all. I'm asking you to learn. I don't want you to change. I'm not asking you to change. I'm asking you to learn. And I really believe that through learning and examining our systems and our procedures and our practices and the context in which we work, that if we do the learning, then the change will automatically happen.
I like that quote a lot. It seems very growth mindset-ish, you know, but I'm not asking you to change, but I'm asking you to learn. It seems empowering. It's taking the focus and making it a positive. And when you pack it that way, who doesn't want to learn? Who doesn't want to grow, right? And actualize and be able to, you know, just accomplish their dreams in essence.
Right. Well, and the truth is nobody in a school system or nobody in a school wants to admit that they don't want to learn, because in a true culture of learning, we are all learners. And that's what is so important. So it's a matter of, you know, when we're just talking about changing something from doing it one way to doing it another, certainly we can have resistance and it's natural for people to resist change. But if we frame that change through a lens of learning, then the resistors look differently, right? You know, they not everyone is so apt to listen to the resistors when it's a matter of learning. And so I believe the school leader's job is to provide the provocations and the explorations for learning to happen. So, you know, it's a matter of, I don't necessarily believe that our curriculum needs to be as prescribed as it is in many schools. However, I do believe that there's a fine balance between what learners need to know and what they want to know. And a lot of times, kids specifically don't necessarily know what they want to know because they haven't been exposed to many things. And I think that the same is true for the adult learners in the building. It is the principal or the school leader's job to make sure that our teachers, our adult learners in the building are exposed to different content that makes people think and understand the new context. And those new contexts are exactly what is the reason that change is so necessary in our schools. But if we frame it in change, we'll always get the pushback. So I work really hard at framing it in a learning way.
And remind me again, when you were playing school, what age were you?
Oh, first or second grade, you know, race to get the teacher manual.
Yeah, so first or second grade, Missy, what elements, so you want to change the compliance part, but what elements of that educator is still with you today?
Well, I think it's the love of being with people when I was learning. So I was very social. You know, my dad would go to conferences when I was in high school, and my teachers would say, oh, you know, she could be getting an A if she wasn't such a social butterfly. So I wasn't necessarily, I was a good student in that I loved to learn and I was very compliant. My behavior was, you know, appropriate, but I was definitely a social butterfly, and I made sense of the world based on how people responded and interacted with me. And so I think that that's very much at play in my career as an educator. You know, I'm constantly learning by how people respond to me, and I'm constantly making adaptations to what I'm doing or thinking in order to meet the needs of the people around me. And that was, you know, evident in my social butterfly-ness in high school, I'm certain, because learning for me is very social. And, you know, that's how I make sense of the world for sure.
Is that just something that you, I guess you had that natural awareness, you say or do X and you see Y is the reaction with the person and then adapt? Or is there an actual system, you know, that you actually operate with?
Well, I think for me, it's pretty innate. But if I'm speaking in terms of how I support others in getting to an understanding that schools are changing and the world is changing, I go to the Modern Learning Lens, which we talk a lot about through our work in Modern Learners and then in our communities, Change School and Change Leaders. And essentially the framework or the lens that we look at everything through at Modern Learners has essentially three circles. And the circles are beliefs, contexts, and practices. So what do we believe about learning? How do we believe students learn most powerfully and deeply? And then the context is about what's happening in the world that's impacting learning. You know, the internet has accelerated and amplified lots of things, not just negative things, but really what's happening in employment. How are we adjusting and preparing our children to work in a gig economy, which is very real? And what is the impact of the gig economy on the lifestyles of, in terms of the future of work? What impact does that have on our lifestyles going forward? And are our students and our learners ready to adapt to that? And then not only that, but, you know, we, our students and our learners have much more access to people around the globe, and they have access to experts in any given content area, you know, through a tweet or Facebook or any number of avenues. So the teacher is not only the person that's standing at the board anymore. The teacher is actually the global world. And I think that context is often not recognized or not given enough. It's not really understood in terms of how accessible people with expertise are and not made available to our students. In fact, often, you know, banned from reaching our students because of the way filtering systems in our schools work. And then the final circle is practices. So what do we do in the classroom that creates an environment that matches our beliefs and is aware of our context? And, you know, the more school leaders that I coach, the more I start to realize that there's a significant gap between what we do in terms of our practices in school and what we believe. And I think that that is where the negativity about this amazing career that we're all in that's where a lot of the negativity stems from, is because we do things that we don't necessarily believe in simply because that's the way it's always been done, or because there's a mandate about this or a mandate about that. Where if we as school leaders could work really hard to make sure our practices match our beliefs, then we'll get to a place where we have effectiveness. But until then, we do have strands of ineffectiveness. Just like if we have beliefs and contexts, but we don't have any practices, we have ineffectiveness and inconsistency. And if we just have beliefs and practices that match, then we get irrelevance. If we don't have an understanding of the modern context, then a lot of what we're doing is irrelevant. So we have to have all three of those pieces in the framework, the beliefs, the context, and the practices working together. And then as we look at everything in education through that lens, then we can get to a place of modern learning where we are really focused on learning and not compliance.
Today's show is proudly sponsored by Organized Binder, a program which gives students daily exposure to goal setting, reflective learning, time and task management, study strategies, organization skills, and more. Organized Binder's color-coded system is implemented by the teacher through parallel process with students, helping them create a predictable and dependable classroom routine. You can learn more and improve your students' executive functioning and non-cognitive skills at organizedbinder.com. Yeah, this is fascinating. And so those three circles, beliefs, context, and practices, and everything that modern learning offers, where can people find out more if they want to dig into this work?
Yeah, certainly. You can find us at modernlearners.com. And we do have a blog that we do every single week, and it's called Shifting Conversations. And usually it's written by Will Richardson or Bruce Dixon. They are the founders of Modern Learners. And then we also have Modern Learners podcast, which is super great. It usually is a conversation between our team, and we hash out what the Shifting Conversations blog was all about. So we're constantly looking at articles and things that are, you know, found on the internet, and sort of diving into what is really being said. And we really think that the narrative of school needs to change. And what we mean by that is, you know, modern learning is, when the framework or the lens of modern learning is practiced, it's really the most equitable way to serve our learners that we've ever seen. And so we have conversations about that and sort of push people through that. And we always look at every piece of content through the lens of modern learning.
And it's a pretty bold statement to make in terms of equity, but I guess, you know, you have the anecdotes, the experience, the data to back that up.
Right. Well, you know, modern learning just is a way of really providing access through digital means, because there's more digital means available, and people. And when we look at all of those pieces together, we are talking about creating a culture of learning. And the culture of learning really provides equitable access, because we are less guided by grades and standardized tests and more guided by the beliefs that we have about learning to make decisions. So then we can look at the learners and help them make personal learning choices and learn how to learn based on just an understanding of how the modern learning lens works. So it's a lot of practice in terms of looking through the lens. But when that's practiced, we do see more equity for students. One of the biggest examples is the Peel School Board in Canada. And they have been putting in modern learning practices for about 7 years. And it started with their leadership team and a cross-section of teachers. And they put out this document called Empowering Modern Learners. And that is their district's mission, vision, values, beliefs. And that document is quite lengthy, but it was 7 years in the making. And now they're starting to really make sure that their practices and what's happening in their schools every day aligns to that document. So they've created visuals that are in every school that relate to that specific document. And one of the things that they have said in that work is that they've noticed a significant change in just the cultural barriers and that they used to see, that they've started to not see as much anymore because of just providing access both digitally and to people. So it's exciting work, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely exciting. And it's great that you're engaged in it. What you just shared, you know, with the listeners is awesome. And now they have another place to check out, another podcast to listen to. And I know we connected and you wanted to talk about a resource you've created too, the 7 strategies to win the war on learning. And I'm curious if you could tell the story about that.
Sure. So one of the blog posts that came out in the fall of 2017 was written by Bruce Dixon, and it was called "The Emperor Finally Has No Clothes." And it was, you know, we put it on the blog and we did a podcast about it. And we also posted it on Facebook, of course. And that particular blog post was shared over 3,000 times. Wow. It's been seen over by over 1.5 million people. And so we were talking about, well, clearly
we've hit a nerve.
We need to extend this conversation. And it wasn't just that blog post, although that was the impetus for the ebook that we have, that we're releasing. But, you know, we have Change School and Change Leaders, which are two communities for high level educational leaders. And one of the things that our members constantly say is, what do we do about the test? And this is a global conversation. We have school leaders from Canada and New Zealand and Australia and Hong Kong and Dubai and also Namibia and people from all over Mexico, even. And the question always comes back to, what do we do about the mandated tests? Because I believe, well, from our experiences, you know, the mandated tests serve a small function, and that is to basically assess the adult's ability to create curriculum and then to measure how well that curriculum is doing. But somewhere along the line, those tests started to measure students. And somewhere along those lines, those tests started to be evaluation components for teachers. And so these tests are at the heart of sort of the world's devaluing of education. And yet we as educators still perpetuate that story because we're constantly working to improve the test scores and do more test prep. And, you know, we're really trying to, and we have several teachers who are facing, you know, medical leaves because of mental health concerns, because of how much pressure they feel because of these tests. And if teachers are feeling that, we know that there are kids and families that are feeling that as well. So again, we feel really strongly that assessment needs to make more sense. And there is assessment that matters. And there is assessment that can inform us about our learning. But there's a lot of assessment that is happening in our schools that just doesn't make sense. And we felt like it was time that we took a stand on that. And so that's how 7 Strategies to Win the War on Learning came about. And so this is in a 47-page ebook with action steps, strategies, conversation starters, and additional resources to support student assessment that matters. I think we quoted 7 or 8 additional pieces of work related to that. And I made you a special link. So anybody listening, if you go to bit.ly/modernlearners, BLBS, for Better Leaders, Better Schools, you can get to where you can get this downloadable ebook and really read and dive into what these are. But that's how it came about, because I think all of us know that there's some assessment that's going on that is perpetuated by the corporate sector and not necessarily in regards to learning. So again, that link, Daniel, is bit.ly/modernlearnersBLBS. So I hope your listeners head on over and pick that up for sure.
For sure. And that's easy to memorize, but it's okay if you don't. You know, if you're a longtime listener, we have all these resources linked up for you in the show notes. And so if you want to go ahead and grab that amazing resource, 7 Strategies to Win the War on Learning, I love that it's practical. It's something that you can consume and enjoy, you know, in one sitting at 47 pages. But that's linked up for you definitely in the show notes. And I highly encourage you to check that out.
Yeah. And so the other thing with that is, you know, a lot of times we have conversations about the impact of testing on our students, but we don't really know what to do with those conversations or how to proceed. And we've laid out some really good strategies for both having the conversations and making sure we're asking the right questions, and then following up with specific action steps to sort of take in your school to make sure that the culture of your school is focused on learning and not focused on testing.
This podcast is a proud member of the Education Podcast Network. Podcasts for educators and podcasts by educators. Listen to all the great education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com. That's edupodcastnetwork.com. What I really like about that is, you know, I used to teach a class in my church about talking about race. But, you know, the point is we need conversation starters. We need guidelines. We need, how do you even talk about these, what we know to be really important topics, but they're scary. And so again, you know, if that's in there, Seven Strategies to Win the War on Learning, that's just such an incredible resource I want the listeners to check out.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing that's in the resource that's super helpful is just the amount of data and history. The ebook is actually started by the history of how standardized testing came to be and how it came to be at such a scale, how it started small and then expanded into now there's a $1.4 billion testing market in the United States alone.
Right.
And so there's all of that data and history in there for you too.
And does it give you any tips on how to start a testing business if you want to earn some income?
Yeah, no, we left that part out, I think.
That's good. I appreciate you dodging that minefield as well.
For sure.
Hey, let's talk about some tips that you could share with our listeners too, because you were a former principal and you've worn many different hats within your career in education. And so I'm curious, in terms of routines and rituals you might have that help you have an impactful day, whether that's a morning one or maybe it's a wind down routine in the evening. But is there something that you're consistent with that really helps you produce your best work?
Well, what I found, my most consistent routine happened on Monday mornings. And what I found for me was when I walked into the school each morning, I had a place to be, right? So I had a duty to do in the main lobby, and I greeted all of the middle and high school students. I was the principal in a small rural school with just 377 students, pre-K through 12. But my post in the morning was always in the lobby where kids entered each day and kind of waited until the bell rang so they could go into their classrooms and the hallways and whatnot. But so seeing them every morning was really great. And I appreciated that time with the students. And it was there that I had lots and lots of conversations that helped me keep a pulse on what was happening in the building. But my Monday morning routine was what I felt gave me the most sanity in the role. And my Monday morning routine was pretty simple. As soon as the students went off to their learning for the day, I went to my office and I closed the door. And I did my planning for the week. So it was at that point in time that I looked at my schedule. I looked at the events that were coming up. And I sort of made a plan for where I would be each hour of the day for that week. And my major meetings would happen on Monday mornings as well. So I met for 30 minutes every day or every Monday. With my student social media interns. So this is going to sound a little bit crazy, but I gave my students, three of them, complete access to our school Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram accounts and charged them with telling the school story. So each Monday, I would meet with them for a half an hour. We would talk about what stories we told last week and what was coming up this week that we wanted to tell. And they also presented at the board meeting each month. So we would make sure that we were tracking our stats and paying attention to who was viewing and watching and, you know, what stories were getting the most reach and that kind of thing. And we, you know, I did a little, took the opportunity to teach them a little bit about social media as a career and different things that you have to look for and the algorithms. So we talked a lot about that. And then we made a plan so that we would never be behind the eight ball with the story that we were trying to tell. And they did a fantastic job. So I met with them every Monday. And the other person that I met with was my pupil services. It was our leadership team meeting. So we, you know, our pupil services director and our counselor and our, my like secretary or admin assistant was in there with us just because there would be things that we needed her to accomplish so that we could keep moving our work together. And we documented all of the projects. And so as we brainstorm, we decide what we're doing, what we completed, what we're doing now, and what we'll do in the future. And those meetings were about an hour and a half every Monday, and they just kept the work going. But it was a lot of discussion and documentation of what was happening so that we felt like we were actually, we could actually see our progress. And so that was really helpful.
Yeah. And to pick apart some of these points for the listeners, documenting the process, because a lot of times as leaders, you know, I just talked with one of my favorite people in the world, and he'll know this if he listens to the podcast. I don't want to share the name, you know, put him on blast at all. But he was a bit frustrated with his role. And the thing as a change agent, as an innovator, as a leader, you're looking at all the things you want to accomplish in the future and everything that hasn't been done yet. And I said, whoa, you know, look in your rearview mirror. What are all the amazing things you've done just this year? And he listed like 15 things, you know, and then he used the powerful sentence too. And probably most schools, it would take 3 to 5 years to get this done. And I said, really? Let me rephrase back what I heard there. But the point is we sometimes forget to pump the brakes, to use the rearview mirror and just celebrate where we've been. And that's why I'm saying this documenting what you've accomplished is so important in a leader's life, because a lot of times we're so focused on what we've yet to achieve and we don't celebrate all the amazing work we've done. I love.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I love that you've been intentional, you know, on those Mondays with your time. A big question that gets asked all the time is, what do we do with our fires? You know, all these emergencies pop up, or I don't seem to accomplish what I set out to do. And really, when I poke under the hood and I ask, well, you know, show me your calendar and tell me how you plan your day, there is no plan. And so with a lack of intentionality there, right, where there is no vision, people scatter. Plan your day, plan your week, plan the month, plan the quarter, and give yourself some white space too so things can be moved around, but be intentional with that time.
Yeah, intentional is my favorite word. And my modern learners team would, you know, every time we say it, they say, Missy's word, intentional. And that's absolutely the way I feel, because the more intentional we can be about where we are and how we spend our time, the more we can understand that we really have done some really great work. But a lot of times, if we're not intentional, the work just gets away from us and we just do what we do because, you know, it's what showed up in front of us. And that a lot of times, if we just focus on what showed up in front of us, we miss the opportunity to really see what the vision is and to really bring the vision to life, because there's no vision, right? So being intentional with your time is the first step in getting to the vision.
Yeah, absolutely. And the last point I wanted to pull out, and I have a follow-up question too, is giving students voice, you know, through social media, giving them access, trusting them. But it was so cool. Yeah, so cool though to you know, I'm sure you hit ground rules, and that's where I want to revisit in just a sec, but to weekly follow up, what were the stories we told? What are the stories we want to tell? And then the opportunity too to get in front of the board and say and present, right? Because people are interacting, they're engaging, they're consuming the content you're pumping out there. You might not always see that audience. You see the likes, you see the replies. But how cool is it too to go to the board that's helped run things, you know, within your school, your district, and say, these are the kids that are in charge. Like that had to be a pretty neat moment. But where I want you to chime in is for the leaders that don't get that yet or are wondering about the next steps in terms of how do I give over the reins to my kids and trust them, and that, you know, I don't get fired for this. Like, what did you do? Oh, what was your process?
Oh gosh, that was that's actually a story in and of itself. So the first of all, I knew how important telling the story was. Like I had bought that important piece, hook, line, and sinker. And I knew that I didn't have the time to curate and tell the story from the multiple lenses that we needed to tell the story from. And I knew that the school is a community thing, and the community wants to see inside the walls, and they want to hear it from the kids. They don't always want to hear it from the adults. And so I really felt like they had a much louder and stronger voice to celebrate what was happening. And what it did was it really, people came out of the woodwork in terms of students and staff in terms of wanting to tell their story. So we had a Google form that allowed us to let everybody submit stories that they wanted to have featured. And I really hit home. This is one thing that I think people don't realize is that social media presence for schools does not need to be immediate. So you, just because something's happening right now doesn't mean the story needs to be told right now. And I think we realized that really early. So we started to plan and prepare what stories we were going to tell. And that gave us time to put out really awesome stories. It gave us time to create videos of the highlights. It gave us time to get quotes from students and teachers. And so they really, by the way, they got a half a credit for elective. And they really learned a lot of language arts and English skills, a lot of business skills in that process that I really felt was necessary for me to connect the dots for them. So I didn't just say, oh, you're our social media intern and, you know, post whatever you want. Yeah, no, it wasn't like that at all. I needed to make sure that it was a learning experience for them. And I'm happy to say that one of them is actually working in the sports information department at the college she attends. And it's because of the work she did at her high school that landed her that really awesome internship. But we definitely followed the Intel social media guidelines. That is what I took to the board to say, this is what we're going to follow. They're amazing. I didn't want to reinvent the wheel. They had everything I wanted. And so I just said, we're going to adopt this as our structure. And I basically asked permission and said I would follow up with them and teach them as we went. And so in the end, we ended up having more like mainstream press media than we'd ever had. We had 5 front page articles in the regional newspaper, the one that goes out, you know, from the major city. Mm-hmm. And then in our small town newspaper that has features like 3 or 4 other small towns, we actually monopolized the front page of that particular piece of media for the first time ever. And people couldn't understand what the shift was. And the shift was, well, they were getting all of their media from the students. So they would scour our Facebook page for the story to tell. Hmm. And for the first time, they were coming to us and saying, oh, that's really cool. We didn't know that was happening. Right. Well, now you do. Tell the story. And so it really, really worked well. And so the other major piece with students telling the story that was awesome. In the Google form, we made sure to keep track of, you know, is this elementary, middle school, or high school? Is this athletics, academics, clubs? And we wanted to make sure that there was equity in that. So we did an equity audit once a month to make sure that, you know, we had, if it was the elementary, that we had something from each grade level. You know, we weren't going to be able to feature every kid on the school social media pages as intentionally, but we could certainly focus on grade levels. So when teachers started to have their own classroom Facebook pages, I really advocated that they keep track somehow to make sure that there's equity in who shows up on the posts. Because, you know, parents, if you're going to have that, they're looking for their kid. So we have to be conscious of the equity piece in that as well. So that's how that story was born. And that's one of my most proud pieces. The most disappointing piece of that is that that work was not sustainable. And the reason it was not sustainable is because the leader that followed me was not nearly as comfortable as I was with this work. And so because he wasn't as comfortable, the work didn't continue. And so again, now they're back to, you know, where they were prior to me, and it's been 5 years. So as other schools have like embraced the storytelling, the school that led the way is actually not leading the way anymore. So that's one of the disappointing pieces. So that's one message I would say to the leaders out there, is to make sure that your work is sustainable. You sort of have to set it up to make sure that it can continue when you leave. And I thought I was doing that with the students being in charge, but then it was just a comfort level. And again, the board didn't necessarily hire with that in mind. I think if they had thought about it and were more intentional, they probably could have sustained that.
Yeah, sustainability and, you know, legacy and those kind of things are important questions to wrestle with. So what would you have changed, I guess, to maybe have made it more sustainable?
Well, I think I would have had a conversation with the Board of Ed when I was leaving and just said, you know, you really have an amazing storytellers. And if you want to make sure that storytelling continues, you need to make sure you have a question in the interview process that sort of asks the candidates, you know, how comfortable they are with social media and telling the school story. But even if they hired somebody that didn't have the same level of skill in that area or understanding or lack of fear is maybe the better way to put it that I did, I think just by asking the question signals an expectation that the story will continue. And I think that I didn't, you know, I work at a regional service agency now with 31 school districts. And so as I was leaving my principalship and starting to do more consulting with the 31 districts, there was just so many other things that I had worked on that I had wanted to be sustained that, you know, my exit notes included a million things, but I don't think I included that. And that's such an important piece. And I also felt like the students would keep that going, but they just didn't have the same level of voice with a new person.
That's pretty cool. I really like that last quote. Asking the question signals the expectation. School leadership is hard work. Why should funding student-centered programs be difficult too? If you're stressed about your budget and where you'll find some extra cash to run a great program for kids, I have a solution for you. Introducing the Top 10 School Fundraising Ideas for 2018. In this guide, you will find the best school fundraising ideas available in 2018. My favorite company described in the guide is School Spirit Vending. School Spirit Vending brings hassle-free fundraising to schools through custom sticker vending machines installed in your school. The best part, you do absolutely no work. The School Spirit Vending team installs, maintains, and shares the revenue collected with the school. You can learn more about School Spirit Vending and the other magnificent companies mentioned in the Top 10 School Fundraising Ideas for 2018 at schoolzonepodcast.com. Go there now, download the Top 10 School Fundraising Ideas for 2018 at schoolzonepodcast.com. And Missy, I think I'd like to end here with one big question I end every podcast with, but that is, you're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by any resources. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you build your dream school and what would be your top three priorities?
Well, my top priority would be to create a belief system that was based on the idea and theories of learning. And constructivism and inquiry would be at the heart of what that would be for me. And I actually think that the belief system is the center of everything. So if I was building from the ground up, I would get the players on board and we would build that belief system that is heavily rooted in constructivism and inquiry. And then we would build out the space together. And sort of, like you said, build it from the ground up, but based on a very significant belief system. And that's what I would do.
Well, Missy, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Any parting words of advice and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Well, I can be found at Melissa Emler everywhere, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. And I love Instagram right now. It's my new favorite thing. I don't really know why, but it is. So at Melissa Emler on Instagram would be super fun. Head over there and just check out my real life. And I try to not make it a highlight reel. But anyway, it's such a cool place. And then my biggest piece of advice is what I said earlier in the podcast, but I'm not asking you to change. I'm asking you to learn. So just do what you can to learn every day.
All right. Well, we'll check you out on Instagram for sure. And Better Leaders, thank you for investing yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember, life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Danny and Missy. Head over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Missy in the search bar. The show notes page will pop up. You'll get the highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect. Missy, thanks again for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Thanks for having me.
Better leaders, just a few more things before you take off. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the show. This helps gives the show some social proof, aka iTunes juice, and encourages new people to listen to the show. If you are a social media junkie, share your biggest takeaway from the show, and feel free to tag me on Twitter or Instagram. My handle is Alien Earbud, an anagram for my name, Daniel Bauer. Take the letters, switch them around, and create something interesting and new. That's how I got it. This Sunday is the weekend resource. Do you want to get a short email from me every Sunday where I share the best resources I have come across, links to interesting articles, books, blogs, and podcasts that have challenged my thinking, and a quote that's inspired me and will inspire you as well? If you'd like access to this resource, head over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and join the newsletter at the top of the page. Over 1,000 school leaders subscribe, and I think you'll benefit from it too. In the newsletter, I also share when a new blog or podcast comes out, as well as different opportunities to work with me. Thanks again for listening to the show.